This March the 9th, 2005. I welcome everyone here this afternoon. We're going to start off with a work session on Senate Bill 102, and I'll open the work session on Senate Bill 102.
Thank you, Madam Chair Member. Senate Bill 102 authorizes the Department of Transportation to convey interest in real property to a landowner whose property loses access because of a department action. You have at your seat at the dais the Dash 1 amendments that prohibit the department from acquiring an interest in real property for any purpose other than providing access. You also have a fiscal statement on the measure that indicates a potential cost savings that they're not able to estimate at this time, but those cost savings would revolve around reduced construction costs, reduced maintenance and liability costs, as well as reduced condemnation costs. ODOT further estimates approximately a $5,000 one-time cost due primarily to the administrative rule process. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right. I believe we have someone from ODOT with us today. I don't have the sign-in sheet.
This work session only. That's why we're going to make it.
Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be here for the work session. I thought maybe I'd just do a real brief reminder or an update on the bill. This is to help property owners and taxpayers when access is closed and a property becomes landlocked. Right now, we've only got two options. We can offer to purchase it or build a public road to replace that access. Public roads are a lot more expensive than roads built to driveway standards. Senate Bill 102 would provide a third alternative, purchase land or an easement from another owner for a landlocked owner, and then build that to driveway standards, which are cheaper because there's less use. In the course of working with the committee on it, Senator Whitsitt had concerns about making sure that this exercise of eminent domain was strictly focused for the purpose of this easement and not for anything else. We met with Senator Whitsitt, Legislative Council, and came up with this proposed amendment, which reads, the subsection does not authorize the department to acquire an interest in real property for any purpose other than providing access as described in this subsection. We think it'll save us money in several areas, particularly because in recent cases, one in Southern Oregon, one in Eastern Oregon, we've had to purchase entire properties because we haven't had this option of doing this limited kind of easement. So we think it will serve both property owners and taxpayers alike.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Starr.
Would you be interested in a motion?
I would be.
I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 102.
All right. Senator Starr moves the Dash 1 amendments to the Senate floor. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor say aye, and all those no, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Metzger, Senator Pomanski, Senator Stahl.
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt.
Aye.
Chair Berger.
Aye. The Senator Stahl.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 102 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Stahl moves Senate Bill 102 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed, no. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Messer, Senator Brzezinski, Senator Stahl.
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt.
Aye.
Chair Berger.
Aye. All right. The motion having received the required majority is passed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Senator Whitsitt, you would like to carry it. It's a carrier. All right, Senator Whitsitt will carry it. Next, we'll open the work session on Senate Bill 448.
Thank you, Madam Chair Member. Senate Bill 448 exempts from motor carrier laws Vehicles used for public transportation purposes approved by the district school board. Vehicles used in the transportation of persons for hire by nonprofit entities regardless of distance traveled. And vehicles, government vehicles owned or operated as carriers of persons for hire. We have a no revenue and no fiscal impact statement on the measure. You do have also the dash one amendments that simply add an emergency clause. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I was going to put it up to members of the ladies on Wednesday morning.
I just want to testify.
I'm getting ready to do it after this meeting.
Okay. Okay. All right.
All right. I don't see Senator Johnson here to say anything, so I would entertain a motion. There is an amendment also.
Madam Chair, I move dash one amendment to Senate Bill 448.
Senator Starr moves the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 448. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Metzger, Senator
Pazansky,
Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator
Mitchell.
Aye.
Chair Berger.
Aye.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 448 as amended to Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate House as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Metzger, Senator Pazansky, Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator
Wissett.
Aye.
Chair Berger.
Aye. All right, the motion having received the Murkai majority is declared passed. And Senator Starr?
Sure.
Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 152, public hearing and work session. And I will now open the public hearing on Senate Bill 152. Here.
Thank you, Madam Chair members. Senate Bill 152 authorizes the issuance of lottery bonds for grants to finance the construction of passenger terminal at the North Bend Airport. It would declare an emergency effective on passage. We have received a potential revenue impact statement on the measure, and I will note that this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Judith. Senator Westman.
As always, Madam Chair, you are my heroine. For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27. A few brief words. I know this will be a continuing and lengthy discussion, the concept of expanding not just one airport, but all of our airports to create a true air transportation system in this state. I fully understand and support the crying need at North Bend. This is a very noble and worthy project and must and will be done. But I would urge the committee in their deliberations to look at the system as a statewide system, put on our creative thinking caps, see what other bonding authorities, whether it be revenue bonds, COPS, I have no particular funding mechanism to suggest other than to truly try to find an additional revenue source to help create a statewide air transportation system. And also perhaps look at the Connect Oregon, the concept behind Connect Oregon, and see if the air transportation system shouldn't deserve a larger section of those well-appropriated dollars. I appreciate very much you bringing this bill forward.
I appreciate those comments, Senator Westland. And we are working very hard on the Connect Oregon process. It's a beautiful concept. And I agree with you that we do need to look from a statewide position. So thank you very much.
It is in your able and capable hands, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. All right, Representative Cruz. Senator Cruz, excuse me. I'm going back to my old days.
You are, Madam Chair, and sometimes I get confused and end up on the side of the building and I can't find my office.
You're going to keep it.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1, Douglas County and South Coast. I am going to encourage you in the strongest way possible to send this bill down to the Ways and Means Committee where it belongs, so it can be part of the front-end discussion of what we do for infrastructure in the state. I know the Connect Oregon bill is also in play here, but I would suggest that the funding for this may not appropriately come from there just simply because of the time delay. We have the ability to do the bonding. But the fact is that if you look at the state of Oregon and the recession that the South Coast has been in for the last decade, we need some infrastructure improvement to bring the economy back. Bandon Dunes is becoming a destination resort. It's becoming known worldwide. We don't have appropriate ways to get folks in there to take advantage of that facility. And if you look at all of the efforts that have been going on for the last several years to make the Port of Coos Bay viable, certainly having an airport with more capacity is a part of that. But you also have to look at the way that the community has stepped up to the plate and already committed resources and all the work that's been done on the local level. And it's appropriate as a state in economic development when a community has already stepped forward and put everything they have on the table that we step up and in an attempt to assist them. This is absolutely a shovel-ready project. It's ready to go. There's one piece missing, and that's the bonding authority from the state. And I think the state investment of $10 million is a small price to pay for the great deal of economic benefit that the coast is going to receive. The coast oftentimes feels neglected when we deliberate here in this body, and this would send a strong signal to the folks in your district and mine, Senator, that we recognize the needs of the entire state of Oregon, not just the Willamette Valley, and we want to see folks on the South Coast succeed just as the folks in the Willamette Valley are succeeding. We need the help. This is the type of help we need, and I urge you to send it to the subcommittee that you sit on so it can be part of the front-end deliberations.
Well, Senator Cruz, thank you so much for those comments. And I know that the local people who are here today and have driven a long distance to come and testify more than appreciate the kind comments that you've made.
Well, and Madam Chair, I've met with them, and I did not go into details because they have those. These folks really have their act together. This project's ready to go. We just need as a state step up to the plate. And if you talk about Connect Oregon or any other term you want to use, this will be one of the first things up and running. So this is a success story for the state and also for the region. So I urge passage of this bill to Ways and Means.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Senator.
Chair Verger and committee members, it's good to see you sitting up there.
Thank you.
You look good. For the record, I'm Wayne Krieger. I'm a state representative for District 1, which is 70% of Coos County, Curry County, and Western Douglas. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 152, the North Bend Airport Project. In learning of the development of this project, I was pleased to note that the airport district not only had the phase one, the terminal thing, but they were looking long term, clear out in phase two and three to 2023. It's a very long, forward-looking project that is anticipating the growth that we think is going to happen in the area. The bill can be best, in my mind, described as jobs, present and future, and business opportunity. My district actually lies 20 miles south of the airport, and so you might wonder why I'm as interested in this project as I am. Many of my constituents that live in Powers, Banner, Myrtle Point, Coquille, and clear south as Port Orford work in the Coos Bay, North Bend area and are directly affected by the jobs and opportunities in that area. We believe that the completion of the natural gas pipeline will stir development and bring more people to the area and additional need for the airport transportation and the shipping. The possible new liquid gas terminal project that is being brought forward, I think, also is going to be, it brings two ships a month into the Coos Bay area as projected, is going to have an impact on the need for that airport to expand and have the technology that they need. The new rail spur for the new mill that's going out on that side of the North Bend across the bay is another thing that links all of these infrastructure projects together and is going to provide, I believe, opportunity in the future. Mr. Hickok is here, I believe, from Bandon Dunes, and he will expand on the Bandon Dunes golf course. But I wanted to talk a little bit about it, and I asked my staff to get a hold of him yesterday and get me a few figures. And they may be off a number here and there, and he can correct those if he wants. But I think it's really interesting to see what this airport and how it's being used by Bandon Dunes. Because if someone would have told me a few years ago that Bandon Dunes would be there doing what it's doing for the South Coast economy, I would have probably laughed at you. I understand that as of June 2005, there'll be 450 people working at Bandon Dunes, about 95% coming from the South Coast, and another 325 caddies, about 50%, I understand, that are coming from the South Coast area. And I further understand that about 65% of these people that come to Bandon Dunes come from outside of the Pacific Northwest. They come from all over the world, Asia, and throughout the United States, and it's becoming worldwide known. And be mindful of the fact that those are all dollars coming into the community that would have never got here any other way. It's huge for the South Coast. I believe there are about four flights a day that come into Bandon Dunes, the planes that hold around 31 passengers, and they have as high as 12 landings in the summer. Corporation planes that come in, private jets that come in during the season and throughout the year, especially even this year when we had the good weather, you can have anywhere from 15 to 30 private planes there at the North Bend Airport who are at Bandon Dunes for sometimes fly in for a day, sometimes they're there for the weekend or a week using the facilities. And they're all of those that come in for that, you know, they're all bound for the airport. The plane that I came in on there last year, there's 30 people, 28 people, half of them were going to Bandon Dunes. And I couldn't believe, I mean, they're all talking golf, and I don't talk golf. I'm not a golfer. They're going to be, I believe there's two golf courses in operation now, third one coming online. A total of 54 holes, and they have an off-season rate and then a rate during the busy season. 55-acre practice area, 219 overnight accommodations, four restaurants. And I believe that Mr. Hickok can expand on the $20 million worth of planned construction over the next couple of years in that area. They're going to have international events there at the golf course are planned in 2006 and into 2007. And the statistics they talked to staff about was 55,000 room nights, 60,000 visitors, and 105,000 rounds on the golf courses. To me, that is, you talk about something that's economic boom, and that's growing. We don't have to wait for it to grow. It's already there and is going to contribute. And I believe they're planning an additional two golf courses, another 300-night overnight rooms. And this is all additional employment. Bandon Dunes and their employees are helping drive the South Coast economy. It is, in fact, necessary to proceed at the North Bend Airport to accommodate the anticipated growth at Bandon Dunes and in the Coos Bay area of the infrastructure projects that I mentioned. The North Bend Airport project is economic development, just plain and simple. It's opportunity, and it's family wage jobs. And in my own mind, it's business and wages earners that are paying taxes. And I was going to stop, but I'll just add something. Last night, as I normally do, I woke up about 1 o'clock in the morning and read, lay around, can't sleep. I got to thinking, over the last 4 or 5 years, how many thousand people who are, for the most part, that's a high-class golf course. A lot of wealthy people come in there, and they're flying in. They see a deep-water port. They see a rail system. They see and will know about the gas pipeline and the rail line. How long do you think it's going to be before one of those wealthy people who has infrastructure dollars is going to say, I want to live here or I want to build a plant here? He's going to see that opportunity. I'm surprised that it hasn't happened, but it will happen. So here again, I think it's a huge project for the South Coast. I'm glad to see that you're on top of it, and I think together, I met with the speaker yesterday, we've got some encouragement there, and we're all going to work real hard to make it happen. Thank you.
Representative Krieger, thank you so much, and thank you for your support always of issues. We partner well, and I always appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. Gary Letelier, would you like Claire Jones to come up as well with you? All right.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the Transportation Committee. My name is Claire Jones. I am the chairman of the Coos County Airport District. We appreciate the fact that your committee was able to travel to Coos Bay in February. I'm sorry I wasn't there. I was out of town. To hear our testimony, and equally pleased that you took time in your schedule to tour our facilities, visit the proposed site of our new terminal facility. Several people are here today to offer testimony. Nikki Witte, a member of our Coos County Commission, will talk to you about the regional transportation planning approach, the Oregon Solutions program that she convened. Also, Mr. Hank Hickok, Vice President and General Manager of Bandon Dunes Golf Resort, who will speak about his resort facilities and the economic impacts that are being realized in our region. And finally, Gary Letelier, our Executive Director, will review the proposed project with you again, and we would be happy to answer any questions after the testimony has taken place.
Thank you very much, Clay. Good to see you today.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Gary Letelier.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Nikki Witte, Coos County Commissioner, and I am providing you with written testimony, and with your permission, I'll just highlight it so we can give more time to the other two. I was asked to come today to talk about the amount of local support behind this project. And the project actually started in November of 2002. Coos County voters passed Oregon's first airport service district. It was a ballot measure on our ballot. And shortly after that, the South Coast Development Council started taking a look at transportation issues within the county and the region and put together a group of people to create a white paper addressing those issues and to select from that report one project that could be done fairly quickly that would have the most economic impact or the most bang for the buck. And so I'd just like to call your attention to the first highlighted section on this on the first page gives you the board members of the South Coast Development Council. And thanks to Senator Verger, who then was Mayor Verger, we have the South Coast Development Council. And it's doing some good things, Joanne. So you can get an idea of how varied their backgrounds are and their interests are. Also, you'll notice the Bay Area Chamber of Commerce is involved in all these three of these phases that I'm going to tell you about. When they support something that comes from a membership of 650 organizations. The people involved in the white paper included representatives of a number of different local organizations, public and private, and as well as the Federal Aviation Administration. And I didn't bother to list names, just affiliations there, because I wanted to try and keep this to two pages. And then during October and November of 2003, the South Coast Development Council coordinated presentations all over the county on the white paper and the idea of moving forward with the airport terminal project. Then the North Bend Terminal Project was designated by Governor Kulongowski as an Oregon Solutions Project in late 2003, and I was appointed the convener. The purpose of the project, as all Oregon Solutions projects, is to come up with a plan of action for moving forward and bring all the partners to the table that you need, both local and state or federal. And so you can see I've listed all the team members that were involved in that project. I did bring a copy of the brand new guide for our Bay Area Chamber, so you can see there really are 650 members. And I brought you a copy of the white paper, just one, to leave with your staff. I didn't want to burden everybody with all this paper. So I think when you review all the names and all the organizations that have been involved with this project, most of them probably, and a lot of our citizens, since 54% of the people passed the measure creating the district, I hope I've demonstrated that there's been widespread support, and would appreciate your yes vote on Senate Bill 152.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Witte. That was a great presentation, and I do think that the local people deserve a lot of credit, and that's important. I think in the presentation that there's an emphasis on what you've done on your own. Sometimes people come to the state and have not done very much. And I always appreciate it when people have done a lot of their own homework. And we certainly enjoyed being down in the area. We have some conflicts this afternoon, as you can see by the size of the committee. They will be here. They are, hopefully, the other two are on their way. That's just the way it works in the Capitol, and you know that, and so I don't have to explain that to you, but I know that they are very familiar with the project and would like to have been here for your presentation. So, All right, next.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, staff, my name is Hank Hickox. I'm the General Manager, Vice President of Bandon Dunes. Thanks for giving me the time. I think Representative Krieger covered quite a bit of what I might have told you, but I will try to add a few things. You know, oftentimes golf courses are thought to be for the wealthy or to be private and not open to the general public. In our case, our golf courses are totally public. Many Oregonians are there playing today as I sit here. They are designed to be that way forever. So we do not have a real estate component. We have been the result of one man's passion for the sport. We're very fortunate that Michael Kaiser, our owner, chose our South Coast area to follow his passion, and we feel very lucky. As a native Oregonian, I feel especially lucky to be there and be the manager. And so these are public facilities; they are not private exclusive facilities. True, we do enjoy visitation from all around the United States. 65% of our business does come from as far away as the East Coast, a high preponderance from the Midwest, the Southwest, the Southeast. It is great to have these dollars coming in to our economy and to the state of Oregon and to the Pacific Northwest so that we're not recycling our own dollars. We're enjoying new income. As Senator Berger, I apologize for boring you with some of these things that you've heard so many times from me. You know, I was the president of Salishan for 15 years, and I was the general manager of Sun River for 5. And, you know, it's really tough to establish a destination and get things up and going. It can take a long time. And we've been really lucky that this project seems to have been blessed. Certainly the success of the project does not mean that we have an outflow of dollars going back to Mr. Kaiser's homeland in Chicago. In fact, all the dollars are being recycled back into the project. Currently, as Representative Krieger said, we have over $20 million under construction. By June 1, our new facilities will open, and we'll have the three golf courses and related facilities. Quite an expansion. We'll be opening as much as we did originally. I think it has been very exciting for all of us who live on the South Coast and for Oregonians in general. The Pacific Dunes Golf Course is now ranked number 2 behind Pebble Beach. We've become quite a nuisance to Pebble Beach. We're very happy to be in their company and to be characterized as the second best golf course by most media. And Bandon Dunes, of course, is number 9. So it's likely that, you know, with all of these accolades, of course, the expectation level goes up, and transportation is a key part of that. We do see significant load factors now on the horizon flights with limited capacity. We do see a significant number of private aircraft come and go from the North Bend Airport. They weren't coming, of course, before the development, but they're coming as many as 12 a day in the summertime. It's been very exciting. I think I might just mention two more things. In 2006, we'll have the Curtis Cup, which is an international golfing event, a ladies' event, much like the Ryder Cup. It will be the first event of its kind ever to be held in the Pacific Northwest, first in Oregon, and of course our first, but it is our entree into national and international events, paves the way for us to maybe someday host a U.S. Open, which would bring more recognition to the state and hopefully more expenditures in the tourism area. That is followed in 2006 by the U.S. Mid-Amateur event, and we will be working hard to continue that ramp up until we do have one of the major events. You know, many times the hospitality industry, I use that as an umbrella, is characterized as minimum wage jobs. I suppose that could be true in some cases. In our case, of the 450 staffers that will be on board June 1, 300 are full-time with benefits. That's an approximate number, give or take 5 or 6 people. And they come close to or do or exceed family wage income. And they do enjoy medical, dental, 401k with a match, a separate profit-sharing plan, a new childbirth annuity, and other benefits. We have a number of skilled positions, and most of them, with the exception of a very few that we couldn't fill from within the Tri-County area, are people that live in our area. And so we like to believe that it has had a significant impact on prior unemployment areas, and it has stimulated the economy. We plan to continue our development, and we feel that the airport facilities are part and parcel to our master plan, and I appreciate the time to be able to chat with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, we appreciate very much the opportunity to appear here today. And again, thank you for the committee coming to Coos Bay, and especially appreciated the fact that you took time to visit our site and the proposed construction site. You've heard a lot of
testimony. Give us your name.
I'm sorry. My name is Gary Letellier. I'm the executive director of the Coos County Airport District. You've heard a lot of testimony already, of course, here and also in Coos Bay about economic impact, and certainly Nikki talked about the process of everyone, you know, networking and pulling together on this project. And so it truly has been a project of regional impact. After the white paper was really sort of a call to action for us, and so we rolled up our sleeves, and in your packet of information you'll find a two-sheet spreadsheet like this that details the cost of the project, and it is a $45 million project over a 20-year planning horizon. The first phase goes through 2008, and specifically Senate Bill 152 addresses the terminal construction phase one. You see on the first page there of $18,698,000. If you go right across that column, you'll see that $10 million of that is actually Senate Bill 152. There's another almost $4 million there that is FAA entitlement funds, which are already programmed for the project and would come to us over the next 3 years through our entitlement grants. And then finally, there's $5.3 million of local and passenger facility charge fees that would go against the project that would be generated probably through borrowing by the district. It's significant to note, and I know we supplemented our testimony after your Coos Bay visit with a letter to the committee, but mm-hmm. It's significant to note that there are other projects in this first phase, the first of which is the existing terminal building, which you toured, very small, of course, but we are attempting to at least renovate it for this next year or two. And that project has already been funded by the FAA and is in progress. Actually, they started yesterday. The next item here you'll see is our air traffic control tower, phase one. And then further down on the page, phase two. That has been also fully funded by the Federal Aviation Administration at $3 million. And we hope to get into the design phase of that later this year. Also, it's not just the terminal that needs to be replaced. It's the runways that need work as well. And so you'll see on this first page that one of our runways, 422, and the associated parallel taxiway with it also are programmed for reconstruction and actually relocation of the taxiway. That's another $7 million that's already been programmed by the Federal Aviation Administration. So what I'm trying to demonstrate here is that the FAA has committed a great deal of funding here. The district literally has put everything it has on the table. And so we're asking you to help us with Senate Bill 152. And with that, that concludes our presentation, and I'd be glad to answer any questions, or all of us would.
All right. Do we have some questions at this panel? Senator Starr.
Thank you. And thank you very much for making the trip to Salem today. And again, we appreciate your hospitality when we visited your community. I just want to make two comments, or I guess potential questions you can respond to. First of all, as I've talked to a few folks about this particular bill and this project, one of the responses that I've gotten back is that the terminal building itself that we're talking about in this project is pretty grandiose. I think that might be a quote, in fact. And if you would comment perhaps on the design, did you consider other places, setups as you went about the process of planning for this? The other comment or question that I put on the table is in reaction to Senator Westland's testimony about other airports throughout the state and their additional, you know, needs for upgrades and improvements, maybe even airports that have significantly more air traffic than North Bend currently has. You know, would you object to if a process by which maybe we use Senate Bill 152 as a vehicle to look at our general aviation system in Oregon and look for opportunities to build a system that that worked well together. Those are just two comments. I'd entertain any thoughts that you might have.
Why don't I try to start? The first is the terminal plan, and actually in the first planning phase, that the location that you visited was actually a third. It was the third choice. Our first choice was a large hangar located on the central parking apron of the airport. We all felt that that would be the best location from an economic standpoint. It was cheaper to develop, and it utilized the apron that is already there, so it saved a great deal of money. But one of the two things happened to change our minds. 9/11, which changed forever our security regulations and rules and made it very, very difficult to continue to operate a general aviation and air carrier operation side by side. The other is the huge influx of general aviation business jets, large business jets, that several times during the year occupy the entire length of that apron. It became painfully obvious to us that if we took a third to a half of that apron for commercial aviation down the road, that we couldn't support the business air traffic. So we at that point made a decision to go back to the planners and ultimately arrived at the site on the plateau. Now, the plateau is more expensive. It's 20 to maybe 30% more expensive to excavate because it's a split elevation. But as for the grandiose of the plan, the actual design doesn't exist at the moment. The planning staff or the team is in place and they're ready to go. But actually, our phase one square footage numbers are very conservative. They in fact track the Federal Aviation Administration's advisory circulars for design. So, I guess I'd, in a kind way take issue with the grandiose plan. As for the second issue, I'm sorry, refresh my memory.
That's the one I want to respond to.
Please, I'm sorry.
Chair Berger and Senator Starr, I agree with you 100%. You need to look at airports statewide, and I think the first place you need to, I mean, I think this is probably more than an interim work, because when we tried to use the airport statute, you can't make head nor tails out of it. It was written in 75, amended in 77, and nobody's ever used it or looked at it since, and a lot of things have changed. But I would hope that you move Senate Bill 152 forward and then introduce something else, and we would love to help you because we've been there and done that on a lot of this.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, then I'll get you to step back, and I'll call up Mike Burton.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Mike Burton. I'm the Community Development Division Manager for the Economic and Community Development Department. This bill is important to us because it positions the department as a vehicle for the delivery of $10 million of grant resource to the North Bend Airport Project. I would just like to raise a caution and suggest a couple of possible solutions relative to that caution. The bill, as it's written, creates a definite timeline for delivery of resources, cash, to the project. It proposes to raise the money through the sale of bonds, and because the Treasurer and the Department of Administrative Services try to economize as much as they can on the sale of bonds, we're not certain that bond sales could be held in a manner that would allow for the delivery of cash on that schedule. So one of the suggestions I would make would be that we remove that rigid schedule from the bill and allow some flexibility relative to delivery of cash. That, of course, would depend on whether or not that flexibility was workable from the project proponents. So I think it would be useful to have them address whether or not they could receive the money on a flexible basis. Another option would be to amend department authority so that we could make a loan to the airport authority. Currently, we cannot. The program that would allow us to deliver this resource, the appropriate resource, would be the Special Public Works Fund. The Special Public Works Fund currently lists a set of eligible applicants in statute. It does allow us to do airport projects, but only for airports owned by cities, counties, ports, and special districts established under ORS 198, Chapter 198. This airport district was established, as you heard, in a unique way, and so we don't have the authority to do finance an activity that we otherwise would be able to do. We are proposing a technical corrections bill for the department's infrastructure programs, House Bill 2174. We've surfaced this question with the other eligible applicants, the cities, counties, ports, and special districts, and tribes. I forgot tribes. They have no objection to amending the statute to allow us to include this airport district or airport districts of this type as eligible applicants. And if we could do that, we could provide an interim loan, and then at such times as the treasurer and administrative services may have bond sales scheduled and could issue these bonds with those others, we could be paid back and retire the debt. So it would change the vehicle nominally, but provide us a way to get around the rigid timelines that are currently in the bill. Given a source of funds, $10 million, and given some flexibility in the timing of the delivery of those funds, the department is ready to discharge your direction and has no other problems with the bill.
Now, Mike, do I understand this would be from the lottery funds of the Economic Development Department?
Chair Berger, it is my understanding, and as I read the bill would allow the department to sell, or the state, to sell new bonds to raise the money. It would not come from existing resources within the department. If it did, it would be problematic because of the size of the investment, because our grant capacity, as you may well recall, is based upon a sustainable model for our revolving loan funds. We are limited by the amount of income we generate off the fund in terms of our ability to deliver grants. So our total capacity to deliver grants from this program in a biennium is about $10 million. If without new funds, as proposed in the bill, this would exhaust all of our grant resources for the biennium for the state and the Special Public Works Fund. Additionally, it would require another statutory fix because we are currently limited to grants of no more than $1 million to a given project.
And the vehicle for changing that is House Bill 2174?
Yes.
And the decision on that, of course, is separate from 152. So
sure.
The other decision, or any other decisions, would be made in Ways and Means.
Chair Berger.
A subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Chair Berger, I believe you could strike the timeline from the bill in this committee. And allow for flexibility. We'd have to figure out a mechanism to deliver the money in a manner that was satisfactory to the project proponents. And as I suggest, one option in that regard would be to give us the authority to make an interim loan. However, I would propose that if the state were committed to selling bonds and raising money for the project, that the project proponents could go to the bank for interim dollars. Given a committed source of takeout financing, sale of bonds to raise $10 million, I think there would be no problem making this a bankable deal.
All right. Mike, I'll get you to step back, and I'll ask Gary Letellier to step forward and comment on what you've just heard.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't know that we really care about the mechanism so much as being able to start the project. If there was a clear way to guarantee the funds, I think he's essentially correct that we could borrow from another source. That is by no means certain. There are other legal ramifications and complications. So I don't know your process here very well, but it seems to me like that might be able to be handled in ways and means. We'd prefer funding as quickly as we could get it, of course. But if economic development doesn't have the mechanism to administer that, then I guess we need to do something about that, certainly.
Well, and he suggested that that mechanism come through another source. Mike, you want to come back? And we want to be very clear on this. You can stay there, Gary. Just stay right there.
Chair Verger, members of the committee, I'd also like to point out that should the bill pass, I believe we have the authority to deliver $10 million. The problem is we don't have the ability to do an interim loan under our current statute, but we're proposing to fix that.
Right.
You would be giving us the authority to deliver $10 million on a schedule per the bill or without a schedule if you took that out of the bill. That problem would be solved. We could then move forward and take out a bank loan, for instance, with that money. We are seeking the authority to include the airport district as an or similar airport districts as eligible applicants in our special public works fund, which would give us the authority. We currently have the authority, if they were an eligible applicant, to make them a loan to tie them over to the point where we sold the bonds.
Mm-hmm.
That would work for us, Madam Chair, with the exception of essentially I think we're talking about a bond anticipation note of some sort that would involve some interim interest. I'm not sure how we'd, like I said before, we're putting everything on the table, so we don't have a lot of working capital to spend on interim financings, but the concept would work for us.
I would really prefer today that we move the bill with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. We will work out what needs to be done in the meantime, but I would like to move the bill from this committee, and then let's work out, because this is really the funding process and the mechanism by which we do that.
All right.
Thank you very much. All right. Is there anyone that I have overlooked on House Bill, Senate Bill 152? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 152, and I'm going to open a work session on 152.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 527 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference, and I did need 152,
yep,
not 152. I did need 152.
Yep. All right. Senator Whitsitt moves Senate Bill 152 to the floor with the due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, there's two blanks on the back page. I assume that those blanks will be filled in.
Yes, and I had asked about that, and they said that would be filled in by Ways and Means. All right, any further discussion? All right, those of the opinion that the bill should pass should say aye, and those no, and clerk will call the roll.
Senator Messler?
Aye.
Senator Brzezinski?
Aye.
Senator Stark?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
Aye.
Chair Berger?
Aye. Senate Bill 152, having received the required majority, is declared passed.
Thank you.
All right. Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 75. I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 75. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 75 allows the Department of Transportation to select certain vehicles for verification of compliance with financial responsibility requirements. It does declare an emergency effective on passage. We have received a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Lorna Young.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Lorna Youngs, Department of Transportation, DMV Administrator. The bill before you is a pretty simple, straightforward request. Under our current law, we are individuals who drive motor vehicles are required to be insured, and the law also directs the department to verify that insurance through a random sample process. And that random sample process selects from all of the registered motor vehicles, some 4 million vehicles. We have developed what we think is a more efficient approach to that, because the current methodology only yields about 5% individuals who ultimately end up with a suspension for failure to have insurance. Meanwhile, a number of individuals provide information to us, go through the process of getting that verified, and it's not a particularly efficient methodology. But the department now has a automated liability insurance reporting system that was put in place as a result of legislation several years ago. It was put in place in 2001. And what that system does is give us fairly up-to-date information about who does or who does not have insurance. And so what we're proposing is, rather than randomly sample from the entire group of registered motor vehicles, to change that random sample process to just sampling from those vehicles that our automated system indicates do not have insurance. We'll still use the same process of requesting verification, because that system is not 100% accurate, because there is a time lag as far as reporting goes. Insurance companies have 15 days to let us know when they have issued a new policy and 30 days to let us know when they've canceled. So we think that this new methodology will be less burdensome on those people who already carry insurance, because we're not going to be sending them a notice. We'll target those individuals that are really intended to be targeted by the purpose of the legislation, and will be a more efficient use of resources. And we urge you to pass the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Lorna. I want the committee to know that for some reason I got it in my mind that this bill meant that they would be randomly stopping vehicles. And I was very much opposed to that idea. I said that just isn't going to work for me. And so I had them come over and walk through the bill, or they came over anyway and walked through the bill, explaining to me that they were randomly selecting by list of names. And it certainly is illegal to not have insurance. Anyone that has been hit by another vehicle or in a wreck and then find out the person has no insurance and no way to compensate, and that's just pretty bad. And many times that vehicle without insurance caused the accident. So I think that I can understand the bill much, much better. Are there any questions of Lorna?
Just one comment and a question. The observation is the only place they randomly stop vehicles is in Coburg.
But maybe that's what.
But Senator Przanski is taking care of that.
Okay.
Just a summary then, Lorna. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is that what this bill really does is just give you a better profile of potential violators for you to get closer to the real issue of who may not be insured, and you have identified this group, which is also random, but you have reason to believe that you should inquire this group rather than the general population.
Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, that's precisely the case.
Thank you. Good bill.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Lorna. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 75, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 75. I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 75 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Whitsett moves Senate Bill 75 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, all those that are in favor say aye, and those opposed say no, and the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Brzezinski?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Whitsett?
Aye.
Chair
Brzezinski? Aye. Well, that's all right. You got us both. All right. The motion having received the required majority is now passed, and who would like to carry it? Jennifer Brzezinski? Okay. All right, next I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 77. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair members. Senate Bill 77 excludes certain activities of certified or licensed appraisers performing their duties under contract with a public body that has condemnation authority from real estate appraisal activity otherwise regulated under certification or licensure. We have received a no revenue impact on the measure. You also have in your possession a fiscal statement on the measure showing $5,000 costs in the first biennium associated with rulemaking and some potential other funds you see listed for both this biennium and next biennium on the fiscal statement. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. We have Dennis Riegel from ODOT and also John Jackley. Why don't you both just come forward? All right, begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Jackley, the Executive Officer for the Highway Division at the Department of Transportation. With me is Dennis Weigel from our right-of-way section, who will also be testifying on the bill. Senate Bill 77 was introduced at the request of the department, and it's a way for us to save money when we acquire small, inexpensive pieces of land needed for rights-of-way. The bill would allow private sector fee appraisers under contract with the department or local public agencies to use an administrative process known as an appraisal waiver. Right now, only government employees can do this. The basic idea is to allow state-licensed fee appraisers who are under contract with us or with local public agencies to use a more streamlined administrative process when valuing low-cost, non-complex right-of-way acquisitions. The basic premise is that for these kind of properties, we shouldn't be paying more for the appraisals than the properties themselves, and it's a way to reduce costs to the taxpayer. The bill before you would allow the use of this lower cost process for acquisitions under $20,000. For those over the amount, or if they involve complex issues, a full appraisal would be required. However, in response to some concerns by several certified appraisers regarding the bill, the department is adding an amendment to limit the use of fee appraisers not to exceed $10,000 instead. We worked with committee staff to add this amendment, which hopefully will be available soon. In conclusion, with the increased activity from the Oregon Transportation Investment Act, plus the rest of our construction program, the department is relying more and more on the private sector to handle right-of-way transactions. This bill continues our department's overall push to outsource as much work as possible to the private sector. It still uses the federally approved valuation process and standards, and we feel that it's a more efficient use of the taxpayers' dollars. We'd respectfully request your support for the bill, and at this point, I'd like to ask your permission to have Mr. Weigel add a couple of comments as well.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dennis Weigel. I'm the right-of-way section legislative liaison. Just a few things I guess I'd like to add to what Mr. Jackley has already told you. a thing we want to stress is that this administrative process is something that is allowed under the Uniform Act, which is the federal act that controls all eminent domain acquisitions, and under current state statute, as long as it's done by an agency staff person. The only thing that this bill would do would be to allow us in contracting with fee appraisers, licensed and certified fee appraisers, to have them do the process for us. There are standards that ODOT has been required to create for the use of the process, which have been approved by Federal Highway Administration. Those would pertain when this process is done by a fee appraiser doing the process for us or for a local agency. All the safeguards that we have in place that are approved by Federal Highway Administration remain in place. This doesn't change that or expand that one way or the other. We currently do about 400 of these administrative processes every year in ODOT using ODOT agency staff. A good percentage of that would be going out to the fee appraiser community. So I think that this is a mechanism that will get some more work out into the appraisal community that at the present time is not available to them. As Mr. Jackley had said, this can only be used for simple, non-complex, low-value acquisitions that are needed. Little slivers of property, little pieces off of a highway frontage, off of agricultural land, that type of thing, not anything where there could be any type of significant impacts to a home site, to a building, to any type of a use of the property. Even in low-value situations like that, we still have to do a full appraisal. This bill doesn't amend that in any way at all. We feel that this is a benefit as far as how we use our tax dollars. A big issue for us is when we're acquiring a property that we wind up paying $500 for, and the cost of an appraisal is $2,000-$3,000. And in addition to the cost of the appraisal, if it's a full appraisal, it has to go through a formal review process, which adds additional time and cost. So there would be a savings to our use of the taxpayers' dollars and also a time savings in moving our projects forward. We've run this by a number of people. The Appraisal Certification and Licensing Board has been involved with this since the beginning. They're fully aware of it, and with the amendment that we're adding, which would limit the use to $10,000 or less when we're using one of their licensed or certified appraisers, they support the bill. We actually had a fee appraiser from the Eugene area was going to be here to give you some testimony supporting the bill, but he got involved in another meeting. So we have support within the appraisal community for this. The League of Oregon Cities is aware of it and has no issues with it. A number of the counties I've spoken to have said they support the bill, and it would be very valuable for them because they don't have internal staff oftentimes to do this process. So we actually feel that the benefit of this is at least equal, if not more so, to the local agencies as it is to ODOT.
I have a couple of questions for you. One is, what is the process if I have a very small piece of property and it's appraised and I don't like your appraisal?
Yes. Chair Berger, the process would be exactly the same using this process as when we would do a full appraisal. The offer that we make to you has to be the agency's best determination of what just compensation would be to pay you. We would present you with the offer. At the time we do that, we would turn over a copy of this waiver. It's a form, a pretty easy to understand form. We would turn that over to you just like we would turn over a copy of an appraisal that we would have for you to review it. By law, you have a minimum of 40 days to look at that, to decide if you accept it. During that time, we do a lot of talking and negotiating. And then ultimately we would either reach an agreement or then it would move to the legal condemnation arena. And we settle prior to anything involving condemnation deposit or anything. We settle 93%.
Would I be allowed to have my own appraisal done?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. And who is in opposition to the bill?
There were about four or five fee appraisers, certified appraisers from the Portland area that I had heard about, and I contacted, and we had a meeting about 2 weeks ago. If you'd like their names, I can certainly provide those. And we met and we discussed their issues.
Other questions? Any other questions for these people? All right, I'll have you step back. And I see Mrs. Jarvis in the audience, which worries me a little bit. You're okay? All right. I just wanted to
You just
to
want a nice
sure.
warm seat to sit in. And
yeah, right. That's fine. You're welcome to be here. But when I see you back there listening intently, I think, uh-oh, I need to hear from her. So, all right. No questions? Then I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 77. I do need to ask about the amendment that you're going to have. Shall I have you come back when the amendment is done? Okay. All right.
Madam Chair?
That's very fine.
I'd like to request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow Senator Metzger and Senator Prozanski to record a vote on Senate Bill 102.
Any objection? The clerk will call the names on the roll that they need to be called.
Senator Prozanski.
Aye.
Senator Metzger.
Aye.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow Senator Metzger and Senator Prozanski to record a vote on Senate Bill 448.
Any objection? Seeing no objection? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Very good. And there is no other business to come before this body. I'll call the meeting adjourned.
All right.